Good morning and welcome to Local Matters. I pray that you all have had a great week. We are starting your Friday morning off just right by having with us via telephone Congressman John Rose. Welcome and good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Ben. It's a privilege to be with you and, of course, a privilege to represent the people of the 6th District of Tennessee.
Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be with me this morning. Of course, you were here last year in studio, which I enjoyed getting to visit with you. Really hadn't had a chance to talk to you until then. And I'm grateful you're here to keep the Upper Cumberland informed. That's one of the reasons I always enjoy having you on, is you've got good information coming from the federal level. I know you have all kinds of national media outlets wanting your time, so I'm very grateful that you decided to be here with me this morning and for the people of the Upper Cumberland and everybody listening. So I appreciate you very much. It's been almost a year since we've had you on, and I know quite a bit has happened that last year. Before we get into some of that and we talk about the American Rescue Plan and some mandating on the vaccine, how's your family doing? Your family's wonderful. I just want to know how everything's going.
Going very well. So we, Chelsea's doing great. We've been blessed this year with a second son, Sam, and Sam is coming up on 6 months old. And then our first son, Guy, he'll be four on October 6th. So, and they're both healthy and doing well. A few of the normal things that every little kid has, colds and things of that sort, but they're both doing well and keep me motivated. And so I'm very blessed.
Have y'all been able to be back in Cooville a lot lately, or you've stuck in Washington?
We have. No, we have, actually. So since around the 1st of August, we have been on what they call the August recess. It's probably better described as the August homework period or district work period. So we've gotten a little bit of time during that period, but have been visiting around the district, and that's very important and uplifting, and refocuses me on what people here at home have on their minds and the concerns they have and the views and takes that they have on what's going on in Washington. So it's been a very good period. I go back to Washington in a unexpected way. We got called back to vote on the rule for the consideration of the budget reconciliation process that the Democratic leadership is trying to push through. And so we were back in Washington for a couple of days back in August. But other than that, I've been back in Tennessee or traveling around the district for the last 5-6 weeks now.
And I know everyone enjoys seeing you and the family out and about and getting to talk with you. Of course, times are still different. It's not as, active when you get out in front of people and shaking as many hands and getting personal, but you're still out there in front of people. I'm curious to know, Congressman, what are some of the most popular topics, the constituents, when you're out and about during this time seeing everyone, what are some of the things they like to talk to you about the most, or what questions they like to ask you?
Well, sure. So I think it would be remiss if I didn't say right up top that election integrity is still very much on the minds of people all across the 6th District. We did a telephone town hall now at the beginning of summer, so it's been a couple of months. And we did kind of a poll of what are the issues most important to you. 61% of the respondents said election integrity was the number one issue to them. So that's a pretty overwhelming answer. That was, they had a lot of choices to pick from, and that's the one they chose. So I think that's still very much on people's minds. I was just down in the southern end of the district in Coffee County last night and made some remarks, and that was then after my speech the number one question that people had that they wanted to talk about. Now, clearly, in recent weeks, recent days, lots of concern about the, botched withdrawal from Afghanistan or retreat, whatever you might want to call it, and just the unnecessary loss of life there. So people are very concerned and disturbed about that, particularly those who served in the military over the last 20 years and feel like we have, really fumbled the ball as a country and in a lot of ways, lost some of the gains that were hard-fought, hard-won gains that we had in pushing back against terrorism. So that's very much a real concern. And then I would say, if you think about business people, and certainly I hear a lot from our business owners, small business owners in particular across the district, they're very concerned about the lack of available labor and the inflation that they're seeing in all of the inputs they're trying to buy and the lack of availability through the supply chain of so many critical components. And so that's that's something we hear a lot about as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. It's the lack of supply on things that you never even thought about running out. We were on vacation last week in St. Augustine, Florida, and never been, beautiful place. Love the history there. But we were wanting to go water from our lunch because we wanted to walk the city, and they said, we can't do that. And we just looked at them like, we don't have any plastic cups. And my wife and I looked at each other like, what? And they're like, we don't have plastic cups. We can't buy them. They're not available to us. And I thought, oh my goodness. I don't know how the supply of plastic anything, as much as people recycle now, how that goes away, but the production's not there apparently. And then you go to restaurants that people tell you to go to and they're not open because they don't have staff. And so,
it is remarkable. And I think, we talk a lot about this, but I think you see in this the early stages of what socialism brings. People need to keep in mind that free enterprise capitalism, may not be perfect in some ways. However, markets respond and they respond swiftly. And when the government gets in the way of markets, then they start to freeze up and they start to quit responding. And so I think that's what we see. The government shut down the economy and then continued to essentially to pay people not to work. And, we saw the stats, leading up till early September here when finally the extraordinary unemployment benefits ended. But, a substantial number of the people who had not gone back to work were being paid more not to work than they could earn if they went back to work. And people respond to that. And so we see all these aberrations in our economy that I think are, portend of what is to come if we continue to go down this path towards socialism. And we have plenty of historic examples that socialism, that government command economies don't work. We only have to look south to Cuba and then Venezuela and see the dysfunction, the shortages. Unfortunately, I think we're seeing that here in our country. We're getting a taste of it. And I don't think we're going to like that. I think Americans are used to the benefits of a free enterprise capitalist economy.
We're used to having access to the small things, correct? I mean, that's the American way. We're free to buy what we feel like we can afford, and we have access to what we can afford. And then when you can't have access to a plastic cup, it makes you think, wow, where are we going? And then gas prices, of course, are staying high. They're a lot higher in Florida, by the way, than they are in Tennessee. I found that out last week. But I appreciate your work because the points you made are to me on point. And you mentioned Afghanistan, and I don't want to dwell on it too much because it is a sad situation. You talked about the progress we've made as a country. We've lost that. We've lost that. How does Congress or how does our government get to the point where we can get that back?
Well, I think that's going to be tough. There's the old adage about it takes a long time to establish trust. It is quickly lost, and it takes much, much longer to gain it back than it did to earn it to begin with. And I think that's where we find ourselves now as a country. And it was completely unnecessary. The Biden administration wants to point to the prior administration, the Trump administration, and say, well, they started this. They were planning to withdraw from Afghanistan. But I don't think that's adequate. You don't get to say, well, the last guy said he would do this too. And so now the fact that I have kind of flubbed it up is really on the previous guy because he had the same idea to do a withdrawal. You don't get to be in charge and then mess it up and then blame everyone else. And that's what President Biden seems to be doing. And you don't, they want to tout all the people that they got out, and that's great. Probably, although there's more to that story, I think, than we've heard so far. So, they want to throw out all these numbers of the people who were airlifted out. The point is that we left people that wanted to get out. We left them behind, and we abandoned our allies. Both the nation state allies that we had, who we had brought to Afghanistan, who we had, we had encouraged to help us in the fight against terrorism there. They're disappointed in us. the people in Afghanistan who put their lives and families at risk by helping the United States over the last 20 years, they're now in harm's way, and we left lots of them behind. And we also abandoned, by some estimates, over $80 billion in U.S. Taxpayer-funded armaments behind, weapons behind in Afghanistan, and basically turned them over to the Taliban. And it's really inexcusable that we didn't have a more orderly withdrawal. If we were going to leave Afghanistan at this point, then, you know, there should have been a plan, and there should have been a plan that, you know, got the equipment out, that got the people out, and that was remained true to our allies and friends that helped us fight the war on terror in Afghanistan over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and Congressman, you've been very great about your support for the armed services. Every time I feel like I see you, you're thanking them, and this is appropriate time for you and I both just to recognize we are thankful for all of our men and women serving in the armed forces that have served and currently serving. We lost 13 lives over there. It's sad to even think about. I believe one of those was a Tennessee native from Knoxville, and it's just that hits close to home. And we're not far from Knoxville, and I know that's not your district, but you serve, to me, you're in the 6th congressional district, but you serve all of Tennessee. You serve all of America, in my opinion. It's just like a lowly county commissioner like myself. I'm from the 8th district in Putnam County, but I'm serving the whole county. So I appreciate your vocal, you being vocal about your support, and I appreciate what you're doing in D.C. for the support of everybody in the armed services. So thank you for that. I want to come back shortly and here in our next segment, and we'll move on because I know the American Rescue Plan Act is a big topic, for especially for local governments. So I want to get your thoughts about that. Okay. So I appreciate you so far. Been great this morning on Local Matters. This has been Rogers. I'm with Congressman John Rose. We'll be back in just a moment.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. This is Ben Rogers here with Congressman John Rose. Such a great guest, as always, and I look forward to having him on many more times, as much as he can be. Great information so far. And just, Congressman, just want to get into the American Rescue Plan Act, because, as you know, I work for University of Tennessee, and I work for the County Technical Assistance Service, and my daily career is working with county officials and county employees. And the American Rescue Plan Act and the funding that's come from that is a big topic in my counties. I get calls every single day from mayors or finance directors, highway superintendents, sheriff's offices. They'll call and say, hey, can we spend the money on this? And it's just been a big topic since it's come out, basically, and was approved in March, and then the funds were released in May, I believe. Things are getting running together. But for those local governments that have been spending money, and there's a few, and especially in your district, that have spent some of that money, they've been doing so under the interim final rule, which is the Department of the Treasury issued months ago. We've been hearing since they issued the interim that a final rule would be released in mid-September. As of a week ago, NACO, the National Association of Counties, which I know you work closely with, sent out an update to state executives basically saying Treasury is in the process of reviewing over 1,000 public comments in response to the interim final rule. Now they expect it to be the fall. Do you know, is it just so much comments and material that that's why it's taking long for the final rule to come out?
It's very frustrating, and I feel the pain of local government leaders that are struggling with what to do. And certainly this, again, points to the problem when you get this top-down approach to government. And, you know, it's the administration declared victory, the Congress declared victory on a partisan basis back in the spring when this passed. and they, you know, touted how much money and how much aid was coming, and yet then, you know, they haven't seen that through by getting the rules in place so that leaders know how to use and how they can legally and responsibly use that money. And so it's just a very frustrating situation, and I could give you many examples of it. So I do hear about it, and it's disconcerting and disappointing. And, you know, you add on top of that, that the fact that this is not paid for. So it's, you know, we're borrowing this money from our children and grandchildren and great grandchildren. So it is a very frustrating situation. Treasury, you know, the bill that we passed passed on a partisan basis. The Democratic majority passed this bill at the president's, initiative, on the president's initiative, and they basically just kicked this all to Treasury to figure out the details. And now, you know, months have gone by, and they seem to be unable to get the guidance, the rules out the door, and so it causes everyone to have to sit and wait, and it's not a good situation. What we know from past examples is that local and state leaders are better informed about how to use resources in their communities to make a difference. And frankly, I think that's the direction that the government should go, the Treasury Department, the Biden Treasury Department should go in terms of crafting rules. We'll see if they get there and how much latitude they leave for our local communities. And one last thing I'll say about this, Ben, is, as you know, unfortunately, many of the formulas for the distribution of these funds disadvantaged states like Tennessee that were quick to reopen the economy, quick to get people back to work. So, you know, some of the measures for what part of the relief funds we got were based on the current level of unemployment back in the spring. Well, Tennesseans went back to work to a greater degree than many across the country and many states across the country. And so that's why, you know, and I think that was the right thing to do. I think that's good for Tennessee, and that's why we see Tennessee doing well. That's why we saw that our state is one of only seven in the last seven states in the union that actually saw economic growth in the last year. We know that our state is one of only six in the country that experienced an actual budget surplus in the last year. And I think it's a real testament to our local and state leaders in how they shepherd and take care of the funds that they're entrusted with by our taxpayers and voters.
Absolutely. And you're right. And you answered one of the questions I was going to ask you. How do Americans pay this money back? And you basically said our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren will be paying this borrowed money back. To me, that's unfortunate that we're passing it down the line that far. County governments and city governments, most of them will tell you they are thankful for the money because they can use it, but they understand there is a cost to that. Some of the most popular places they can spend the money on, or popular areas, I should say, is infrastructure, which is sewer, water, and broadband. And here was my thing on that. That's great because a lot of rural counties, especially in your district, really there's areas that need running water, that need water lines ran to them instead of being on well water and all that. Here's the only thing with that. If 95 counties have an idea of running sewer or water lines, extending those water lines or putting in new ones, there's not enough contractors in the state or around us to do 95 counties worth of work. So I think county mayors now are understanding that they want some water projects done, but they don't know how long it's going to take. It may even take 4 or 5 years after the money has to be spent, that 3-year deadline, and so, or actually obligated to be spent, I should say. So now they're looking at other areas. Do you have a lot of county and city mayors calling you saying, can you work on getting us to spend the money on something else? Have you had a lot of those phone calls?
We've had some of those calls. Certainly, I think generally what I would say is just the broad call for as much flexibility as possible in how counties can spend that money. I did have a visit with a county over on the western end of the district, and one of the city officials pointed out to me that in their community, they have water widely available across their community, so they don't need to spend money on water projects. They need to spend money on sewer projects, and yet, you know, they were running into trouble with what they could do. And so I think, again, it points out that this kind of one-size-fits-all, top-down approach that where the federal government comes in and says we're from the federal government and we're here to help. You know, Ronald Reagan once said those are the most frightening words that any person can hear, and I think we see why. And so it is troubling, and I – you know, I would advocate for the maximum flexibility, and the administration and the majority in Congress essentially delegated this to the Biden administration to figure out what the rules would be. And now they seem to be struggling to get their hands around actually sending out those rules. And so what you pointed to, you know, my grandfather used to have an old saying when it came to business that it's the steady drop that fills the bucket, not the big splash. And I think we see that over and over again with these big federally funded rescue plans. We saw it back in the 2009 timeframe after the financial crisis when we all remember the term shovel-ready project and how the government was going to spend it at that time, I think close to $1 trillion. Seems like a modest amount of money now, but on infrastructure plans. And what we learned is that not as many projects were shovel-ready as we thought. And what you've pointed out is true, which is that, and this is why it's the steady drop. It's funding priorities over the long haul that actually gets the job done. Because when you have these big chunks of money come in, you've got a whole lot of money chasing limited resources, limited contractors, limited supply of materials for these projects. And we see that, you know, again, we see this in our economy right now. When we bounced back from COVID, the supply chains had been disrupted, and now they're, you know, you can't get a plastic cup, and you can't get chips for cars, and you can't get, you know, so many lumber is in short supply. And so we would be better off to spread these funds out over a long period of time and have a very, long-term view of how to get these projects done. And that would result in a better outcome for our country and a better use of our money, frankly.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Congressman, we have a little bit more time left when we come back. I want to get into a couple of things that happened last week. This is Local Matters with Ben Rogers. I'm with Congressman John Rose. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Local Matters. Ben Rogers with you. Congressman John Rose with me, and just delighted to have him on this morning. Such great information that's been delivered to us, and always going to continue to ask him to come back because he is our voice and our representation in Washington, D.C., and does a wonderful job at that. Congressman, we covered the ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, last segment. Great job with the information there that's still ongoing, as we discussed. Counties and cities are going to use that money for something, depending on which county it is. Last week, we also, I think it was last Thursday, a little over a week ago, that President Biden issued an employer vaccine mandate. And I've done some research, but I'd much rather hear it from you because you know more about it than I do. What does this mean for local governments, and what does it mean for privately owned businesses with 100 employees or more?
Well, so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, frankly, and I think we have a lot of unanswered questions at this point. Again, so the mandate is going to be implemented through a variety of different auspices. One of those is the principal ones that I think is going to reach private sector employers is that the government is going to issue a rule under the auspices of OSHA to basically say employers to provide for safe working conditions have got to, implement a vaccine / mask mandate. And so the interesting, you know, implications of that is just how far can the federal government go in dictating what our private employers do. And, you know, so we expect there will be significant challenges to that using the OSHA process. Obviously, the government is also going to use its power as the power of the purse, they say, to require participants in various government programs and government contractors and subcontractors to also comply with the requirements that have been put down here in this mandate. And so it will be, I think it will be interesting to see just exactly who complies and who doesn't and what challenges emerge to this over the, you know, in the days ahead. Obviously controversial. I think it's the wrong answer. I think that the government should be using a carrot to encourage people to get vaccinated or to take a look at the vaccine and, you know, encouraging them to talk with their healthcare professionals and get guidance from their doctor about whether this is the thing for them. I have been vaccinated, and I do want to stress this to the folks listening. I got vaccinated earlier. I had a good experience with that, and I do think that it's something that everyone should consider doing. You know, the way I would put it is we didn't ask for this Chinese virus, but we answered the call, and President Trump, through the Project Warp Speed initiative, marshaled the resources of our American free enterprise system and inspired the ingenuity to create an American-made vaccine. Actually, a number of them, three now that have gotten emergency authorizations, and one now that has received full FDA approval. And so this is a miracle of modern science. I'm a product of the vaccine generation. You know, I never had any of the childhood diseases because vaccines were available. By contrast, my slightly older siblings got all of them, and my dad was a polio survivor. And so we should celebrate the successes of American ingenuity in producing these vaccines. And I would encourage people to talk with their healthcare professional and consider getting vaccinated. And I think we should encourage that. I don't think that it's the place of the federal government to mandate it.
I understand. Yeah, that's the conversations I have with friends or family, or even county officials or local government officials, is similar to that. The vaccine is good. It's available. It does prove to help those with that may contract the virus. It helps with symptoms. But they don't want to be forced to take it. They want to do it on their own time. They want to do it at their own pace, because I guess, you know, younger people, I'm 41. Apparently I'm not at high risk. I want to be able to take the vaccine when I feel like I'm comfortable. And so, because I've had the virus and gotten through it. But others, you know, they just don't want to be, frankly, Congressman, people don't want to be forced to have to do anything, you know. And I think that goes back to the conversation we had in the earlier segment. They want to have free will. So I think that's the biggest issue, is they don't want anyone, any government, forcing them to have a vaccine or anything else.
Well, and we need to keep this in mind. We live in the freest nation in the history of humankind, and those freedoms we cherish as Americans, and they were hard fought, hard won, lives lost and sacrificed to win these freedoms for Americans and to maintain them. And I think that it is ill-conceived to come along as a president and think that you have the power to start dictating what Americans do. But we also need to understand there's a price we pay for our freedoms, and we know that. I think we're, you know, Americans are at peace with that. We have freedom of speech, and there's a price we pay for freedom of speech, and that is that we have to hear things that we don't like sometimes, because other folks are going to say things that we don't agree with, and we have to listen to that because we live in a society that affords everyone that freedom of speech. We have the right to keep and bear arms, and there's a price we pay for that. Sometimes there are things that happen that, you know, we wish wouldn't happen. But you know, the trade-off that we make there is that, you know, we can defend ourselves from one another, and we can defend ourselves from a tyrannical government. And so then, you know, in this arena, we have the right to choose, you know, what we do in terms of, you know, the medical treatments that we get. The government doesn't get to tell us that. There may be a price we pay for that individually and as a society. And I think we're at peace with that. And I think federal officials need to keep that in mind, and I would implore the president that he should keep that in mind. And I would say, Ben, I know you're involved in local government, and you know, again, I think our local and state government leaders have balanced that better. I think generally that's going to be true. And in the past, when there have been programs in place, generally they have been implemented at the local and state level, and I think that makes a lot more sense, because if these kinds of programs to encourage vaccines, the use of vaccines, if they're implemented at the local and state level or on an employer by employer basis, then there's a greater opportunity for folks to push back, to share their concerns, and to you know, achieve a redress of any grievance that they have. And so I think it's wrong for the federal government to do it. There are a few very limited places where perhaps it's appropriate for the federal government to consider these things. But I think these broad mandates where they're attempting to basically force about 2/3 of Americans, I think, are going to be impacted by the mandates that President Biden proposed last week, and I think that's I think those are inappropriate. And I hope to see them be challenged. I think the courts ultimately will knock down a good part of the proposals that that President Biden made last week.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how this affects local governments because, you know, a county government specifically is one of the biggest employers in some rural counties. And that is if you combine the general operations such as the fee officials, all the elected officials, combine that with the highway department and the school system. I'm interested to see if the federal government's going to treat them as one employer or if they're going to separate the schools out and the highway department out from the general operations. And I'm just curious to see how that happens because that will affect a lot of counties. That will impact how their employees, if they have to get the vaccine or not, or have to show a weekly negative test. I'm curious to see how that's going to go.
Sure, and there's going to be a little bit of time here. I mentioned that one of the pathways for particularly trying to force employers with 100-plus employees, the federal government's going to use its powers under OSHA. And I think that, again, is a mistake because I think, you know, we have the OSHA rules in place to protect employees in the workplace. But I think when you see an overreach like this, then it brings that whole system into question. Tennessee, of course, has its own occupational and safety health group, OSHA, and so Tennessee will get to write its own rules, but they have to be, they have to be comparable to what the federal standard is. And this is going to take some time to get those rules out the door, and so probably will not be unlike some of the other, federal programs that you've seen that have taken a long time to get implemented. And then, of course, there are going to be challenges in the courts, and so. I think it's the wrong time. I think right now, trust in the federal government and in federal officials generally has been damaged by the missteps of the last, many months. And so I think you're going to see, people are not too willing right now to accept a mandate from on high.
Yeah, a lot of information coming, and I look forward. Congressman, we have like 1 minute left. Is there anything you're working on right now that you're looking forward to hopefully get passed in Congress?
Well, a number of things. Unfortunately, the big issues of the day are, wrapped up in these, controversial proposals. And so it's hard to get those things done. But like, for example, if we have any truckers listening, we've been working to try to get hours of service changes made, particularly to help agricultural haulers. There's a chance that may make it into one of these big reconciliation bills. And so we may be able to get some relief for our truckers through those auspices. I have recently introduced a bill that would offer a reward through the Rewards for Peace program at the State Department for information leading to the discovery of the origin of COVID-19 and hope that we're able to get some interest in that in the Congress. And, very much like the reward that was used to find Osama bin Laden, I think Americans want to know. I think people all around the world want to know, and we want to put pressure on the Chinese to reveal that, reveal what they know about that. And so that's another initiative that we're pursuing. And just appreciative for the opportunity to represent the people of Tennessee and continue to work hard to take our Tennessee values to Washington and get Washington out of Tennessee.
I appreciate you, sir. You definitely represent your district, your state, and your country as well as anybody. I thank you for that. Thank you for your service. Hope your family continues to do well. Tell them I said hello. And if you need anything from me, let me know. I'm here to help, and I just appreciate everything you do.
Well, Ben, thank you, and thanks to News Talk 94.1, and I appreciate the opportunity and appreciate what StoneCom does for the region.
Absolutely. Everyone, you've been listening to Local Matters with Congressman John Rose. I'm Ben Rogers. Be kind to one another. Give a smile to one another. It goes a long way. It's a lot easier to smile than just to frown, I promise you. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.